This is Press Play on KCRW. I'm Madeline Brand. Let's talk now about the arguments in the DACA case before the Supreme Court. Jessica Levinson is here to walk us through them. She's a law professor at Loyola Law School and a regular Monday Legal Eagle. Hello.
Hello.
Well, let's begin with the White House. What are they arguing? What does President Trump say when he says, look, I have the authority to end DACA?
Well, they're arguing a lot of different things. There's actually pretty complicated number of legal claims flying up and back here. So the first thing that the Trump administration is arguing is federal judges, you have no place here. This is an administrative decision by the Department of Homeland Security. When they make policy decisions within their discretion, as opposed to legal decisions, then those are not reviewable. So the first thing that the Trump administration hopes that the judges will say is, we have no place here.
But does that mean that anything the administration does is not legally reviewable?
No. So there is a narrow kind of part of administrative law that says basically if there's an administrative agency and they're exercising their discretion to implement a policy rule, then there may be situations where that is not reviewable by judges. But if they're not exercising discretion and they're making a legal judgment, then that is reviewable by judges. So this is hurdle number one. And this is really a weird one because the Department of Homeland Security is saying, well, we really didn't have any choice. We had to end DACA because it's not legal. And then what the courts are saying is, okay, well, if you had no choice, then you didn't exercise any discretion, and therefore this is a legal judgment. And so I, as a judge, get to be here.
Then you do have the authority to review it. I get it. Okay, so what else are they arguing? That's hurdle number one.
So hurdle number one is, do the judges even get to be there at all? Then hurdle number two is, and this is Ariane actually previewed this, did the Trump administration try and end DACA in the right way? There's basically no one that doubts that the Trump administration has the power to end DACA. It was implemented by President Obama as an executive order. It wasn't intended, frankly, to live forever. It was only implemented as an executive order because Congress failed to act. And so this is where the law that Ariane talked about called the Administrative Procedures Act steps in. And the question in this case is, did the Trump administration basically do its homework? Did they act rationally? Did they have a good reason for saying we're ending DACA? Or did they act in an arbitrary and capricious manner? If this sounds familiar to your listeners, it should, because it's the same issue that was at issue in the Supreme Court dealing with whether or not a citizenship question could be added to the census.
Right. And so is there any evidence that it wasn't arbitrary? Were there long paper trails, memos, research, anything that the administration is citing that said, no, we did go into this, look at it to see whether or not it was effective, how it would be carried out, any of that?
No. And that's the problem for the Trump administration. And that's why three of the three federal courts to look at this case said, no, Trump administration, one, I have a right to be here. And two, you didn't do this the right way. And so what the Trump administration did, or frankly failed to do, which is kind of befuddling to a lot of people, is they just didn't have a searching policy review. They didn't say, let's look at the pros and cons of DACA. Let's look at the economic effects of ending DACA. Let's look at the reliance interests of ending DACA. Instead, what we have is this like basically very short memo by a member of the Department of Homeland Security saying, well, Jeff Sessions told me that DACA is illegal, so I guess we can't implement it anymore.
That's it.
There's a little bit more, but that's the crux of it.
Okay, so as you did mention the census case before the Supreme Court, the swing justice on that one was Justice Roberts. Is he going to be the swing on this one, too?
Yes. And you can see it in the filings. Everybody has now realized they're not writing a letter to Justice Anthony Kennedy anymore, the old swing vote, because he retired. A lot of this is geared to Chief Justice John Roberts. And it's not totally blunt force in the language that the briefs use, but it's clear that they're trying to say to him, remember last June when you said that administrative agencies have to have a decent reason for doing something? Well, here we are again, and here's another administrative agency, in this case, the Department of Homeland Security, and they don't have a good reason. So stand by your word, Chief Justice John Roberts. The question is whether he's willing to go basically two for two on really high profile, controversial cases, break with the conservatives, which is, I suspect, how this will break down. It will be conservatives on one hand, liberals on the other. And where is Chief Justice John Roberts?
So basically, Ted Olson is going to try to appeal to him when he makes his arguments tomorrow. What else is Ted Olson, Luis Cortez, the people who want to keep this program in place, what else are they going to argue?
So in addition to arguing that, you know, the judges do have a role here, that the Trump administration didn't act properly under the Administrative Procedures Act, what they're going to say is, and DACA itself is legal. If you want to get there, they're going to be prepared to argue that that is a legal program. And then they're also going to say, if you ended this, you could actually illegally harm the rights of Dreamers. They have relied on this program. They have many serious economic and educational opportunities. It will affect not just them, but it will affect their families. And so they're basically ready at any moment for four different arguments. It will be really interesting to see if the justices just focus on whether or not they can even be there to review the decision, or if the justices focus almost solely on the Administrative Procedures Act, or if they actually want to get into the legality of DACA.
What about DAPA, which was a similar program which protected the parents of Dreamers? There was a 4-4 split on the court before there was an additional justice to break the tie, which basically left in place the lower court's rulings that it was illegal, right, that to get rid of the program?
Yes, and this is part of why the Trump administration is arguing that DACA stands on legally shaky grounds, because they say, look at what the Fifth Circuit said with respect to DAPA. That was a different executive order issued by President Obama. It dealt mainly with the parents of the Dreamers. It was an much more expanded version of DACA. And the Fifth Circuit said, no, this is not permissible. Of course, it went to the Supreme Court. Justice Scalia died, so there's 8 members. When the Supreme Court splits, the lower court decision stands. And that's part of what the Trump administration is using to say, well, I'm not really sure that DACA is all that legal, because look at what happened to DAPA.
Wow. And they're not going to look at that again. That's done.
DAPA will not come back up, except in this kind of play within a play tomorrow, talking about whether or not the decision about DAPA has any bearing on the legality of DACA.
Okay. All right. Quickly, I want to just make a little right turn into impeachment, because why not? It's a new, fresh week. And Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney is wanting to go to a court to get the court to tell him whether or not he needs to testify before the impeachment inquiry. What's happening?
Well, what's happening is Acting Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney essentially not wanting to make a decision for himself. He doesn't either want to tell his boss, President Trump, the head of the executive branch, sorry, but I am going to comply with the impeachment proceedings. I am going to respond to a congressional subpoena. And he doesn't, on the other hand, want to say to Congress, I know that we're an impeachment inquiry. I know that you issued a subpoena. I know that those subpoenas are at their height during an impeachment inquiry, but I don't want to comply. So he's basically literally throwing this in somebody else's court, saying to a judge, you need to weigh these two competing branches, these two competing directives, and you have to tell me what to do.
Well, meanwhile, the other guys on this lawsuit, John Bolton and this guy Charles Kupperman, are saying, no, we don't want you, Mulvaney, to join our lawsuit. Why?
They don't. They're saying that the facts are different, that the law is different, in part because Mick Mulvaney is still part of the administration. They no longer are. I think they just don't want him there. I think that they're upset that he didn't do the normal thing, which is to ask, should I join your lawsuit. There's no normal about this. It's abnormal on top of abnormal at this point.
Sounds a little sandboxy, to be honest. A little preschool sandboxy politics. Jessica Levinson is a law professor at Loyola Law School and a regular Monday League Legal. Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, why paid maternity leave is not necessarily a good thing for women, And later, Morrissey fans reassess.
This is the same man who wrote these lyrics and who can talk about and sing about racist hate in the Lone Star State, and then turn right around 15 years later and endorse a party that essentially, in my view at least, is in alignment with those things he sings against.
Morrissey's Latinx fan base coming to terms with his support for a far-right anti-immigrant group in Britain. That story coming up on Press Play.